Today we're going to be looking at street preaching and the importance of team in the open air. And as you can see, I knew that I always forget to press record, so I had a nice prompt there for myself this morning. So what we're going to be sort of looking at, and I just want to look a bit at street preaching to begin with, and then the importance of us as a team and what difference that makes when we're out on the streets as well. And so the first thing is the sort of question by here of, is there a difference between preaching in the open air and anywhere else? And the answer is, well, yes, because when we're preaching out in the open air, people can walk off. I don't know about your experience in church, but it's very rare that during a preach in church, a sermon, that someone will stand up and decide to walk out. I actually had to apologize to a preacher a couple of weeks ago. I had an important call come during the sermon. I had to go out an emergency, and I rushed out as quick as I could, and I had to apologize afterwards to him and sort of say, it wasn't anything you said, honestly now. But it's a rare occasion that anyone will stand up and leave a message. Whereas when we're preaching in the open air, you know, we have to get people to stop rather than getting people to just sort of stay there and not walk out, as it might be in church. We've got to get people to stop. And so our communication skills need to be sharper. You know, that actually we need to make sure that we're communicating clearly and effectively to people, and not sort of waffling is what we would sort of say. I hope that sort of translates across, that we don't include too much in there, because our message also needs to be tighter. You know, as you'll have seen as you've been going out with Hartvig and the other guys there, that, you know, the messages are short. You know, we don't generally go out onto the street and preach for an hour, because you're not going to get people to stand for an hour and listen to a preach. It needs to be short and tight and sharp in the way that we do things. And so when we're thinking about the way that we do things out in the open air, out on the streets as well, we need to think about different things with our method. I'll just discuss these, and then we'll talk more about teamwork as we go on. So when we're thinking about our method in the open air, one of the most vital things is we need to be visual. And I'll come back to this in a minute when I talk about how we think about attracting and drawing people. That we need something that's visual, that will grab people's attention. And this isn't just from a point of view of grabbing people's attention, but also because actually people remember so much more what they see than what they hear. And so actually, if we're just speaking, they'll only remember a small amount of that. Whereas actually, if they see something, if it's visual, they will remember much more of that. We also need to be wise in our use of the Bible. This isn't just out on the streets, but actually whenever we're preaching, whenever we're sharing, you know, we don't want to be pulling verses out of context and twisting and changing them to fit what we want to say. Because actually, if we're preaching the true gospel, as we talked about last night, then actually there are plenty of verses to back up what we're saying. And so we need to use our Bibles and use the verses that we bring correctly. The next thing is to watch your voice, because actually what we want to do is, we don't want to just be going out and doing this for a year or two. We want to be doing this for the rest of our lives. If we feel this calling to go out and share the gospel on the streets, we want to do that. And so we need to be careful how we use our voices to project, that we're not damaging our voices. Many of the guys here in OAC in Great Britain have actually had to have operations on their voices and things because of damaging them from not using them correctly. And so it's important to think about how you use your voice, and whether, you know, if your voice struggles a bit more to project in that kind of way, whether you need to do warm-up exercises and look into things like that as well. The next one is then to generally ignore interruptions. Different people have different views on this sometimes, but, you know, some people think that if you get into a bit of an argument with someone on the streets, and that will draw more people. But it will draw more people, but will it actually provide a greater witness if you're in the ended up having almost a shouting match with somebody else on the street? So if somebody sort of heckles, we'll come back to this again when we talk about teamwork, I'll generally sort of say to them, can you just wait 1 minute until I've sort of finished, and then I can talk to you separately? Because equally, sometimes when people shout out to you, you can get drawn into things that you might be happy discussing in a one-on-one with somebody, but actually might not necessarily want to project out to a crowd, because it could be misinterpreted just hearing that one statement that you're saying. And the most important thing when it comes to street preaching is that at the end, stop. And this is something that that I had to learn as well. And I see many people that start out doing street preaching and things in the teams that we're in, realizing that, you know, you've got a big crowd of people. You're thinking, great, there's all these people listening, and, you know, I want to keep going. I want to keep sharing things. But actually, the vital work happens in those one-to-one conversations afterwards, that we can share, as, you know, we can share the full gospel in the preach, but actually what we need to do is get alongside people and find out just where they are and the questions they're asking and being able to answer that. And so rather than continuing on and on and on as a preacher and ended up losing the crowd, it's vital to bring the message to an end, to stop and allow the team that are there with us to do the work. And so that's a vital thing to realize and to know, that actually the team are there and we need to make good use of everybody in the team and the gifts that they're bringing in that kind of way. And so when we're thinking about our method of doing things out in the open air on the streets, but actually I would say in any evangelism that I do, I come to some a verse in Deuteronomy that a good method of communication was suggested by Moses. He didn't actually suggest the sketchboard or balloon modeling or magic or anything like that, but he did suggest a way of doing things in this verse that draws out that actually we can see and hear how we should go about doing things. And this is the verse here, Deuteronomy 31, verse 12. It says this: assemble the people so that they can listen and learn to fear the Lord your God and follow carefully all the words of this law. And I just want to draw out five words from this: assemble, listen, learn, fear, and follow. But actually, to make them easier to understand and remember, I'm just going to change them to being this way here, that assemble, when we talk about assembling the people, it's about attention, getting people's attention in the first place. And that's vital, isn't it? Out on the streets, there's so much going on. People are wandering along, wandering past everything that's happening. There's so much noise. We need to get people's attention. And so we need to think about how we get their attention. And that's why it's great to have a sketchboard or something like that, that actually people will think, what's going on there? It gets their attention. But getting people's attention is not enough, because we can do many things out on the street to grab people's attention. You know, if two people start to have a fight in the middle of the street, that grabs people's attention, but actually that doesn't then allow us to lead on to where we want to take them to. So we need something that will grab people's attention, but then also grab their interest as well. So as Moses said, assemble the people so that they can listen. You know, we don't just want their attention, but we want something that will pique their interest so that they will listen. And that's why often different sketchboard messages and things like that will start off with a kind of question or something that might just provoke people to think, oh, I wondered about that. You know, what's going on there? Or, you know, trying to get people to stay because they're interested. And once they're there and listening and staying, then we can move on to what I've termed here, spiritual concern, that actually, as Moses said, so they can listen and learn. You know, that actually we're there to teach them about God, to teach them about the Bible. But only if we have their attention and interest beforehand can we then move on to that spiritual concern. But it's not enough to just explain to them that Jesus died on the cross and rose again. We need to apply it to them. That, as Moses said here, they needed to learn to fear the Lord your God. And we need to apply it to people so that they realize and understand what it means to them that Jesus died on the cross and rose again. And then once we've applied it to them, as we talked about last night when talking about having an invitation to go with every gospel message, we need to call for a response. As Moses said here, that they fear the Lord your God and then follow carefully all the words of this law. That is vital and important for us to think about this in the work we do out on the streets. But actually, I would say in any evangelism that I do, I'm constantly thinking about these things, that actually you need these five things in this order to try and get things right. That if we don't have people's attention and interest, there's no point us just shouting out the gospel, because they're not listening to us. And if we haven't, then, you know, once we've shared the gospel, as we said last night, we can then move on to applying it to them and responding. And actually, we see this and Paul, you know, doing this in Acts as well. That when we think about attention in Acts 17, 22, it says this: Paul then stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus. Now, Paul had their attention because he'd been called to speak to them, but he still had to stand up to get the attention on him, ready to deliver his message. But then Paul gets their interest, doesn't he? Because then he starts off, people of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, to an unknown god. So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship, and this is what I'm going to proclaim to you. See, Paul didn't start off talking about Jesus. Paul actually started off by bringing something from their culture, something that would promote something in them that they would be interested to hear more. And then he led it on towards Jesus. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in temples built by human hands. And he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything. Rather, he himself gives everyone life and breath and everything else. From one man, he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from any one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as some of your own prophets have said, we are his offspring. That actually he was bringing it then around to God, that talking to them that God did this so that we would seek him and perhaps reach out and find him. But then he applied it to them as well. Therefore, since we are God's offspring, we should not think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, an image made by human design and skill. In the past, God overlooked such ignorance, but now he commands all people everywhere to repent. For he has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man he has appointed. He has given proof of this to everyone by raising him from the dead. That we see there, he's applying it to them that they need to repent. And finally, there's the response. Now, we don't see Paul call out for a response, but we see that there was one. When they heard about the resurrection of the dead, some of them sneered, but others said, "We want to hear you again on this subject." At that, Paul left the council. Some of the people became followers of Paul and believed. Among them was Dionysus, a member of the Areopagus, also a woman named Damaris, and a number of others. Now we see there Paul showing that same thing that Moses talked about, going through attention, interest, spiritual concern, the application, and then the response. And it's an important thing for us to think about as we go out and do evangelism in the streets and anywhere else as well, that getting those things so that we've got people's attention and interest before we share the gospel with them, apply it to them, and call for a response. Now, as I said last night, I want to talk a bit more about, as we talk about teamwork, that OAC's model is an attractional ministry. That this is a recent picture from a mission we did here in the UK up in Sheffield. And at this point, as you'll have hopefully seen out on the streets as well, Roger there on the sketchboard is just starting to paint up, but already a crowd is starting to form. That actually it's that thing of the attention and the interest in the beginning, before we've even got started, that there's something there, the board that's drawing people's attention. And actually their interest is peaked because they're thinking, well, what's happening here? What's going to happen on that board? What's going on? I know I'll stop for a minute and sort of see. And because we've got that attention interest, because we've attracted those people, we can do that. But attracting people in the first place is actually a vital job of the team. That actually often, you know, we might sort of think, well, you know, it's all about the preacher up the front. And even at this early stage, as things are just being painted up, you think, well, there's not much for me to do as a team member. But actually, from the very beginning, there is work for us as a team to do. And actually, it's a vital thing. And because we have a team out there, we can achieve so much more than if we were on our own. So I want to talk briefly about our positioning as a team when we sort of start off with things. And then I'll talk about how we work as a team and how we try to have some of those conversations as well. So when we're thinking about our positioning and that, we've got the sketchboard out, and the idea is it might not always be the best for you as a team member. You're sort of thinking the wind's in your face, but that helps to project it out. But equally, I know in Norway, you have less choice over your positioning because often you're positioned in a certain place on the street and that you have to book a spot. So it's not always as possible. And hopefully, as a team member, the sun will be behind you. And hopefully the sun will be shining. It's rather miserable weather here in Wales at the moment, but hopefully for you, the sun is shining to help you. Okay. And as I said, from this moment that the preacher starts to paint up, the team members need to be there and need to be paying attention and need to be in quite close. As we sort of said, they're 1.5 to 2.5 meters, which always used to be a problem trying to explain to people just how close that was. But we've got used to being 1.5 to 2 meters away from everybody over the past 18 months or so, haven't we, with having to keep social distancing. So we know that actually it's quite a close kind of thing. And Now, this might just be varied slightly at the moment. It depends on how comfortable you are, how you're still dealing with distancing and that kind of thing. So I understand that. But it's being quite close in, because actually having the team quite close in makes it look like a bigger crowd and will then hopefully draw more people. If we're scattered 15 to 20 meters away, then actually, even if there's quite a lot of us, it doesn't look like there's a lot of people because we're spread out and scattered. It's having that sort of close grouping of a crowd helps to draw more. And that's where the team are vital at this stage. And it's vital as well at this point to stop sort of talking and having conversations. And that's, I know that's tough, because often you want to find out how the last conversation went, or, you know, what did that person say? Were you able to share with them a bit more? Did you get to leave them a gospel or anything like that? You want to talk and find out that stuff. But actually, it's good at this point, as the preacher starts to paint up or do that kind of thing, that we stop talking to just form that crowd of interested looking people to hopefully draw more people. Because then hopefully as the message goes on, people will start to come and we'll start to attract more people to come and listen to the gospel. And at this stage as a team member, it's vital to still be alert to what's going on and alert to the crowd that's around us. And that can be tough, because hopefully the preacher has engaged you as well. Whoever's preaching on the board is hopefully causing an interest to you, and you're engaged and thinking, oh, where's this going to go? What's going to happen with this message? What are they going to say? And so we can get caught up in the message, but it's important for us as a team to also remember to think about the people that are around us and just have a little glance around and see who's listening and getting and thinking about who we can speak to once the message is over. And so the vital thing then is also to sort of slowly position ourselves near to people, not take a big step across, but just, you know, often I'll sort of look over my shoulder, see someone and think, oh, and I'll just sort of step to the side as though I'm just stepping out of their line of view, but just moving myself a bit closer, ready to have those conversations afterwards. Because as you've probably already seen, often as soon as the message finishes, people will disappear and go because there's nothing left to hold their interest anymore. And so we need to grab people quickly, not literally grab people, but, you know, get into conversations quickly. And sometimes as a team member, we can still sort of feel there. So you've got the one guy there who's on his own, who doesn't have someone to talk to. And we might think, well, okay, I still don't have a role to play in this team, but actually you still have a vital role, because when you're on your own like that, it's good to position yourself like they have for the group nearest the board, so that the person speaking to the non-Christian or whoever's stopped to listen, that they can see you, because they might want to draw you into the conversation to get you to help. But also it's good for you at that point to be praying for these conversations, praying that God would provide the right words, the right openings. You know, it's a vital job for us as a team to be constantly praying for those things that are going on. So I've just got some do's and don'ts. I do like lists of things. They help me to focus and think about how I do things. So some do's and don'ts for us as team members. So the first one is smile at the preacher. Now, I want to tell you, no matter how long you've been doing the stuff out on the streets and being a preacher and that kind of thing, it's still hard work. And so actually having some smiling faces in front of you is always encouraging and helpful in that kind of way. But also it means that if we go on to the next one, you hopefully look interested as well, because even if there's a big crowd of people there, if you all look bored and sad and upset, it's not going to draw more people, because they're going to think, well, who are this group of people? Why are they listening to this miserable thing? So we need to be smiling at the preacher, looking interested at what's going on to hopefully draw more people. And during this point as well, we need to be praying, but not out loud. You know, we don't want to suddenly burst out, God, I really pray for this person next to me by here. I pray that you will open their hearts. We want God to do that, and we want to be praying that, but pray that quietly rather than causing a disruption in the middle of everything in that kind of way. It's good as well to carry a small Bible, I would say, and literature. So I have a Bible I specifically bought for out on the streets that fits in my back pocket. So I've always got it with me. I've got it ready to be able to share. What I don't want to have is a huge sort of study Bible tucked under my arm, sort of ready to go. It's better to have a small Bible, but also to have literature with you as well. My wife often sort of jokes that I only wear sort of like cargo trousers type things when I'm out on the streets, because I've got multiple pockets then. And I know I've got gospels in this pocket, and I've got these tracts in this pocket, and I've got those tracts in that pocket, because then it's sort of almost like a utility belt ready to go. And because I don't like having to shoot back to my bag to get stuff. If I'm talking with somebody, I want to be able to just put my hand in my pocket, grab it, and be able to hand it over to them. So it's good to have different literature if you can in that kind of way. though she does often say that I look rather stupid in pictures because it looks like I've got sort of bagged out trousers quite a lot and that. So, but it's good to have those things that we're ready to hand those out to people. The next one is, it might seem a strange one, but we need to look clean and tidy. We need to look presentable when we're out on the streets, because actually people judge a lot by first impressions. And if people are sort of looking at you and thinking, oh, I'm not really sure I want to speak to them, they probably won't speak to us for very long. So it needs to be thinking about our appearance and how we look when we're going out on the streets. As I said, we need to be alert to the crowd. What we don't want to do is get so caught up in the message. You're thinking, oh, this is great. This is fantastic. Oh, a fantastic gospel message. And then suddenly you realize, oh, it's finished. Oh, all the people have gone because you weren't paying attention. So always remember to be alert to the crowd that are around you. And so some don'ts. Don't leave during the message. If you leave, if the crowd are all watching and they're there, it's surprising how one person just leaving can make a massive impact. Suddenly you see other people sort of look and follow that person that's left. And then they're like, oh, actually, I'm busy on it. And almost as though their focus has been taken away. And they go as well. So unless it's absolutely urgent, which hopefully it won't be, hopefully you can wait that couple of minutes to the end of the message. Please don't leave during the message. Also, I would say don't argue with hecklers. Leave it up to the preacher to decide how to deal with them. As I say, I would often sort of say to them, please, can you just wait a minute and I'll talk with you. And if they insist on going on, then hopefully there'll be some more experienced members of the team that will hopefully just come alongside them and say, excuse me, would you mind just stepping over by here and we can have a conversation? Or if you feel more comfortable to do that, just sort of say that to the person, can we just step out of the way so we're not disturbing everyone else? And then we can have a conversation about what you want to talk about. Don't talk during the message, because actually, if your talk, even if the preacher is really sort of projecting quite well and, is quite loud in their volume, if you start talking next to somebody, actually, it's very hard for them to hear what's going on because they're hearing your conversation instead. Their ears will pick up the conversation that's nearest to them. So it's good to try and keep that focus, that you're focused and fixed on the message that's going on. Don't distribute literature during the message. I'll talk a bit more about literature and leaflets in a moment, but it's that thing that we're not trying to hide the fact that we're Christians and we're doing stuff there, but equally we're trying to get people's attention and interest at the beginning. So if somebody stops wondering what it's all about and suddenly you thrust a leaflet into their hand that's all about God, then suddenly it's that God stuff, I'm not interested. Whereas actually, had we been able to get their attention and interest, they may have listened, even though it's not something they're greatly interested in, and hopefully we'd have been able to explain a bit more. So try not to just, even though we're keen to get Christian literature out to people, try not to distribute it whilst a message is going on. Don't respond to the invitation. So often whoever's preaching will finish at the end and say, if you'd like to know more, please come and take a leaflet from me. And if nobody takes that leaflet, that's fine. Just leave it be. The only reason you should respond to the invitation is if the message has been so amazing, you've suddenly realized that you were never a Christian before, and actually you want to become a Christian there and then out on the streets, which hopefully won't happen because hopefully you are all Christians already. But if you respond to the invitation, which prompts others to do it as well, people then start to think that it's more like a sales trick, that, it's like, oh, they were one of the team has done it, and that sort of led me to do it. And we're not trying to use sales tricks to draw people in. We want people to genuinely respond in that kind of way. And don't wear sunglasses. It seems a strange one, but if it's very sunny and you're there and you need to, that's fine during the message, but make sure you take them off before you get into conversation, because a lot of how our eyes sort of work and keeping our focus on people helps with conversations. And if you've got sunglasses on, people can't see your eyes and it just makes it more difficult to connect with them. And the last one, don't go shopping. It seems like a strange one for me to say, but I added this one in after doing some training a number of years back, and we were having to gather all together to travel back to our base. And I turned around and I said, oh, where's so-and-so? And someone said, I think he's gone off to buy some new shoes. I'm thinking, that's not like popping in to grab a bottle of water or something quick. That's going to take a while. And it took us ages to try and find this person again. So please, when we're out on the streets, don't go shopping. Even if you've seen the bargain of the century, try and do it at a different time. So when it comes to leaflets and that, passing out tracts, here's some advice there. So as we said, don't pass out tracts when the message is going on. If there are enough of you in the team and the team leader sort of says it's okay, the best way to do it is to have two what we would call outriders. So people that are sort of 15 to 20 meters away that are giving out literature, but giving out literature to those who are leaving. So those that have walked past the area where we are with the sketchboard or the magic and have decided they're not going to stop and are going to keep going, well, then we can hand literature to them. Whereas if their people are coming towards that area, we'll just leave them be, because hopefully they might stop and listen and hear the message and get into a conversation that way. But if you are giving out literature as well, only hold a small amount of literature. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm walking down a street and I see someone with a huge, massive pile of leaflets or something there that they're trying to hand out, I'll sort of veer away to the side to avoid them. So just have a small amount in your hand. You can always replenish it from your pocket or your bag or whatever if you run out. But it's good to sort of have that and just sort of hand it out to people and wish people well. I often say, if people sort of turn and say, no, I don't want it, I'll often say to them, I hope you have a great day. And sometimes that's actually prompted people to say, actually, go on, I will take it, because actually we've been smiling and friendly and nice and polite to them, which makes a massive difference in how we do things. So when it comes to us getting into those conversations out on the street and how we sort of do things, what I would normally start with, almost always, this is my sort of opening line to the person. As I turn to them as the message ends, I say, hello, I'm with whoever it was that was speaking. What did you think about what they were saying? An open question, just to hopefully get a gauge, an idea of where they are and what they're doing. And so as we get into conversations then, as I said, I like my do's and don'ts. So here's some more do's and don'ts during that conversation. As we speak with people, how do we develop that? How do we sort of do that as a team member? So do ask open questions. So these are questions that don't have a yes and no response. You know, that, because you could have asked in that first one, did you like the message? And they would say yes or no. And you don't really get very far. But saying, what did you think about what they were saying, hopefully will allow them to give you a bit more information. That if you're constantly asking closed questions that are just yes and no, it's very difficult to get a conversation flowing. So ask questions that are going to prompt longer answers from people. Do use your testimony. Now, this might just be a British thing, but I know in Britain, we don't use our testimonies enough. You know, that actually often I sort of think we should use our testimonies more and what God has done. I had a fantastic conversation with somebody out on the streets just a couple of weeks ago. And actually a lot of what I shared was not just my testimony of coming to Christ, but actually how God has been working in my life since then, especially since my sort of call to OAC. And actually that really helped to break down some barriers for him. So it's important to use that, because even if people dismiss Christianity and dismiss the Bible, they can't dismiss your story in the same way. That they might not agree with how you've sort of drawn conclusions and things from what's happened, but it's important to use your story. And actually, it's a good chance to sort of ask them a bit more about their story and their testimony as well of what's happened to them in their life. And actually, that can hopefully promote more conversation. Do make sure you explain the gospel. You know, because sometimes we can get into long conversations with people and you sort of think back afterwards, you think, they led me this way and they led me that way, and I never actually felt I properly explained the gospel to them. So it's good to always try and draw the conversation back to explain the gospel. And sometimes that might seem hard, but actually sometimes just taking a stop on things is good. One of the guys that works with us in a nearby town in Bridgend is fantastic at this. I'm not that great at this, I'll admit, but he's fantastic. And I'll hear him often say to people as they're asking lots of questions and leading off down different paths, he'll say to them, look, I can answer all of those questions, but the most important thing for you today is, what are you going to do with Jesus? And he explains the gospel again and sort of brings them back. So look, we can deal with those questions again, but you need to think about Jesus first. And actually, it seems like a harsh way he does it, but because of his manner and things, he helps to bring it back to the gospel all the time, and it works. Do be polite. You know, we want people to leave having a positive impact of what we've said. It's great, I've often sort of said, when people leave and they say, I didn't agree with what you were saying, but I liked the way you were saying it. That if nothing else, if we leave people with a positive impression, at least then, hopefully, the next time they meet a Christian, they'll be more receptive to hear and know more. So be polite to people in how we do things. Be open to God. you know, as we're speaking with people, be praying to God and saying, God, you know, what do you have something for this person? You know, what's the right thing that's going to just unlock this conversation and help it to progress? You know, please help me in that, God. And do direct the conversation towards Christ. Similar to what we were saying before about explaining the gospel. Make sure we bring it back and lead it to Jesus. And if we do have a good conversation with people as well, we need to make sure we take details from them so that they can be followed up. Because we're called to make disciples, aren't we? Not just converts, even if people have made a commitment there. We need their details so that we can follow up and link them in with the church as well. Because that's our aim, isn't it? To seek to connect those interested with a local church. So we want to be able to do that and be thinking about that constantly. Because sometimes when we finish a conversation, you can think, oh, I didn't get their details. I didn't do that. So it needs to be something that's at the forefront of our mind, thinking about how we can be moving these people on and discipling them or leading them further along their path towards hopefully making a commitment with Jesus. And the other thing I would say is, you know, I know some people frown this, but talk with adults and children. You know, if there are children there, you know, don't think we can't talk to the children. If the parents are there, always ask their permission first, if they're happy to. If you've got some leaflets for children, it's great to have that and be able to ask and say to the parents, do you mind if I give it to them? It's good to ask the parents' permission because parents probably won't like you doing it if you haven't. But if you do get permission, then you know, they might be happy for you to talk with the children as well. And be remembering to do that because often we focus on the adults and we forget about those that are younger that might be there as well. So a couple of don'ts. The first one is, might seem a strange one, don't have bad breath. You know, if you have bad breath, make sure you've got some mints or some chewing gum or something with you. It seems like a strange one, but if you think about it, if somebody turns to you and they want to know more, they're keen to have a conversation, you start speaking and suddenly they think, whoa, you know, they won't want to stay there very long and have that conversation. It seems like a strange one, but it can be something that can just destroy a hopefully good conversation and can be easily remedied. Don't argue for the sake of it. And this is one that I've had to learn over the years, because sometimes, you know, especially if you get someone who's like a militant atheist or something, they're there for an argument, you know, and you end up a bit like these people in this picture, sort of butting heads. And actually they're getting more aggressive and strong in their things. And actually what I've learned over the years is actually, you know, your natural tendency is to rise up as well, isn't it? As they start to almost shout at you, you want to shout back at them. But actually just becoming calmer and more gentle in the way you talk will hopefully bring them down from that position that they're in. And sometimes I've had amazing conversations with people that started off and I was thinking, oh, I'm not looking forward to this. Because actually, when you bring people down and calm the situation down, you can just feel God change the whole perspective of things and just help people. Whereas if we just argue with people, often we'll end up butting heads and we'll both leave thinking that nothing has been accomplished. And don't be ashamed of the gospel. Now, I'll say it again. We need to make sure that we're sharing the gospel in these conversations, bringing it to the gospel and making sure that they realize that the gospel is the only thing that can change their lives. It's the only thing that can bring them to know eternal life. And don't pressurize the contact. You know, I said last night, didn't I, that, you know, it's important for us when we're sharing the gospel to be waiting for verdicts, to be seeking for people to make a decision. But we don't want to pressurize people. We don't want people to be stood there out on the streets and feeling as though they have to do what we're telling them to do because we're pushing and pushing and pushing. That's not the way we're meant to do things. You know, we need to be just, it's good for us to ask the question to people, you know, do you feel you want to do that now? Do you feel you want to put your trust in Jesus now? But equally giving them an opportunity to just say, no, I want to just step away and think about it a bit more and that. You know, we don't need to push people into decisions there and then on the street. So don't pressurize people in that way. And the last one is don't use Christian jargon. It's again that thing that comes back to what we were talking about last night, a bit about people understanding what we're saying. And actually there are words that as Christians we use that are used very differently in normal language or that people just don't understand at all. And so if we talk to people about repentance, well, they're not going to understand what we mean. They don't know what that is. And so we need to make sure that we don't sort of use the jargon, the Christian terms that we would use, but try and think about how we can explain those things simply to people when we're out on the streets. And there's some crucial questions that I'll often use just to sort of really guide and get the conversation down to the nitty-gritty of things. And so sometimes I'll sort of ask people this. If you were to die today, do you know without any shadow of a doubt that you would go to heaven? And this is one I'll especially ask to people who are sort of, if they tell me they're a Catholic or a Muslim or that kind of thing, because actually you can then talk to them about how actually we can know this in Jesus Christ. You know, in Jesus, by putting our trust in him, we can know we can get to heaven, whereas they don't know that. They don't have that assurance. And so this can be a helpful thing to guide the conversation. That kind of thing. Or another one I would sort of ask is, if you were to die today and you got up to heaven and God asked why he should let you in, what would you say? This is a good one, especially with people who sort of seem to be leaning and saying that they're, you know, they're a good person and they've done good in their life and they're hoping they're going to get to heaven. Actually explain to them that, you know, the only thing we can say to get into heaven is that we've put our trust in Jesus, actually can help to guide things as well. And so they're good questions just to pull the conversation away from the tangents that we're perhaps going off to and just try to really guide and direct it towards the gospel. But the most important thing as we go out on the streets is just to be ready to do the work that God wants us to do. We need to go out and to make disciples. As Jesus said in his last words to us here on earth, then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." Jesus has commanded us to go out and to make disciples. And the important thing for us to remember as we go out is that he is with us every step of the way. And he is there guiding and leading us. And he wants us to succeed in what we're doing. And so we need not be afraid, but we can be bold as we go out and share the gospel on the streets. And so I hope that was just a sort of a quick session to help you think a bit more about how we preach on the streets, how we're part of the team on the streets, how vital that is. And I hopefully it'll be helpful to you as you go out onto the streets of Oslo today. So thank you all very much.